It's not part of the meeting before we adjourn for the recess. But I made a request for us to debate it first week of May when we come back, so that at least by the 9th of May, it will be with the NCOP, because the deadline with us is the 9th of May. So that's one thing, because we thought maybe that would...
And they are quite on board with this legislation, and also you will remember there's an extension of powers to members of parish titles who are peace officers. They were some of those that were kept in mind there. So the powers in terms of this bill might also be extended then to the ITAC investigators, which I think will give them more powers also in terms of the working environment.
Thank you very much, Karen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With regards to Clause 1, after the discussions, the previous meeting, the following definition on page 4, after line 13, to insert the following definition: antique means goods representing a previous era in human society and selected or desirable because of its age, rarity, condition, utility, or other unique features.
Come again?
I'm referring...
Which document are you using, Jared?
Honourable Chair, I'm referring to the Portfolio Committee Amendment.
Portfolio Committee Amendment, second hand.
Yes.
Yeah, we have just received a call now. My secretary was answering my phone. He said that they've made a space for us for next week Wednesday for the debate, which is good news for us, because we want to finish this bill. Yeah.
Madam Chair, maybe I can just explain the purpose of this draft document. I drafted this actually for my own purposes, because I struggle often to link up the amendment and the bill itself. So this draft document inserts the recommended amendments into the text so that you can actually see it in context. And then you will see next to the insertions, there's a little box or a balloon, and that refers to the text of the amendment. So, this doesn't have page numbers for a specific reason, so not to get confused with the book itself.
Okay.
If you are
referring to the text for,
we are referring to the bill.
So, if you have copies of the bill, you can
may I continue, ma'am?
Yes, okay. You have to be
at a
center.
Yeah.
Please,
don't.
Why are you not
the one who called you around?
Because you haven't been behaving like this.
Now that Kosovo Malogia, everything is up and down. Yes, madam.
Member of the committee.
Madam Chair, if you go through the draft and then you refer to what was in the open, would that not be more helpful if you go through, the draft? Because now it's not going through the draft.
No.
It's going through the original.
No. It's the amendment. No.
Yeah,
draft,
but in the...
In the draft, you have the first bubble here. The first clause is altered in this document called amendments to second hand.
Yeah, control. But my question was, is he using the draft as a basis for the old? Is he using the draft as a basis?
No.
Honourable Chair, to you, this is actually just a working document. I'm not using this at the moment, but this is a working document just to make it easier to follow the insertions and also to see it within the context.
So
we can
use three documents. What document are you using now?
The easiest, Madam Chair, would be to use the amendments and the original bill.
The amendments and the original bill.
That's
correct. So that when he refers to page 4, we know it's page 4 of the original bill.
Yes.
Isn't it?
That's correct, Madam Chair. This document marked draft is only to be able to see the change within the context.
Yes.
So this is actually not, it's just a working document.
So that draft, we'll focus on that when we do the clause by clause, voting, because it will be easier for us, because I think you have stated those that has been inserted.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, ma'am. See, this, the definition of antique was compiled with inputs from people in the antique business. Some antiques may be 90 years old or 50 years old. Normally they are 100 years, but we took out the time span to say that it's representing a previous era in human society. Thank you, ma'am. On the next point, on page 4, after line 44, to insert the following definition. Management includes the chief executive officer, the chief operating officer, owner or manager of a registered dealer, who is responsible for the day-to-day control, direction or supervision of the business of a dealer at the premises in question. There was a massive confusion created by especially the vehicle industry. The discussions was around the premises, and we try to make the definition clearer as the request. The next point, man, say on page 5, after line 16, to insert the following definition. Recycler means a person who carries on a business of recycling scrap metal. I see there's a typing error there. It's a business. On page 5, after line 35, to insert the following definition. Valuables, there was a request for that definition. I had some trouble finding a definition, but in the end we used the method of looking in the dictionary, and that actually normally works best. Valuables means personal possessions that have significant monetary value. In the dictionary, they say this normally refers to a piece of jewelry, but we decided not to include that in this definition, so that the definition encompasses every piece of personal possession which has that significant value, whether it's a big or small item.
If I may be so rude as to just correct here, personal possessions that have.
That's
English now,
Director. Thank you, Honourable.
I couldn't do
the
other language.
The next point on page 5, on line 39, before goods, to insert second hand. This was discussed the previous week. The next clause 2, on page 5, after line 39, to omit section 2. You will remember those sections that are omitted all refer to the penalty clauses, which I'll refer to later on.
Yeah.
But this specific clause to refer to the procedures and the exemptions, and that was just stuck. That was just stuck in after the other clauses. So this will appear later on again. Clause 3 on page 6 from line 10 to omit subsection 4. And that refers to a penalty clause. Clause 4 on page 6, after line 18, before goods, to insert second hand. the next point on page 6 on line 19, to omit for and substitute in respect of. This was just to make it clearer what is meant by the premises and that must have a separate registration. The third point, clause 4 on page 6 from line 24, to omit subsection 4, once again the penalty clause. Clause 5.
If I recall, motor vehicle dealers had a difficulty in the wording of that 4 subsection 2, in that they said, look, they're a registered motor dealer, but obviously they don't have sufficient space on the floor to store all their cars, so they might put them in a lot next door, which then this would say, well, they must have another license for the, where you keep the cars, they will keep the cars here. Does that make sense, that a dealer has to have 3 licenses for one dealership?
On this, which clause are you referring to now, on this one?
That would be number 4, application for registration, 4, 2, where it says, or where goods are stored at an additional premises. And that is actually normally, that's the norm in the motor industry, because the cars are so huge. So they put them on a lot, perhaps next door, or perhaps one block away, whatever's available.
Mm.
And now we're saying that it's actually applied for a second license to keep the vehicles that are going to be sold from their dealership, from here, but do they have to license the lots where the cars stand? It seems to give, that additional premises seems to be extremely onerous, on top of the fact that they all have licenses for every one of their dealers. I think we need to just look at that again.
Yeah, I think that was raised in the portfolio committee by the dealers themselves, the motor industry dealers, about space, certain space in the garage. If you don't have enough space, maybe take 4 cars and you put them next door. Are we saying that they must get an additional license for that? So, what is your comment on that? What did you do about it?
Madam Chair, the present legislation requires each of those premises to be licensed in any event. They have to have a certificate for that. But in our experience, most of stolen goods are normally not kept on the main registered shopfront property, but in back alleys and also storage facilities. But the registration would merely be a registration of the premises, so that the police would know that there is a certain warehouse or whatever, and that may be inspected from time to time. I don't think it will place any more responsibility than they already have at the moment, and I think it actually makes it easier also for them in terms of their association, where the association may say that you may have certain warehouses. The association would recommend that those warehouses be registered, and there may be an exemption in that regard, as an example, because the dealer belongs to an association. But I think the normal run-of-the-mill second-hand shop, it would be preferable to have each of the premises registered in order to have those inspections, if we look for stolen goods, firstly, but also secondly, to prevent a situation where the stolen goods are kept separate from the main business and then just brought in the mornings and taken back in the afternoons.
Yes, I just want to check if the dealers do not want to put the goods in the registered places, which places are they put? Do they want to put the goods? If they are given a place and they are registered to do this, if they want to do it above, outside that, whose place does that then belong to? In any event, that then one must account if the stolen goods are put there, who do you blame? Except to say that that makes sense. So every place they use, they must register. I'm not going to check whose place is, are they going to put the extra goods if they don't put it in their registered place. Thanks, Chair.
Ms.
Kalabana?
Yeah, I think it's incredibly naive to think that someone who's storing stolen goods is going to put them on a registered lot, so that the police can conveniently look down, oh, you have a lot here, number 103 Smith Street, just go and have a look and see all his stolen goods. So that's never going to happen in this lifetime. So what we're doing is actually putting a burden on the legal dealers who either own or lease extra properties just to store the cars before they can be driven onto their shop floors. I don't think in a million years would a criminal who is storing stolen goods put them on anything that's been registered, not in this lifetime. So can we talk a bit further about this?
There's a question that I'm coming to make my point.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
Yeah, the question that I was asking, Shay, was that now the point is, every if you're a registered business, but are you selling secondhand goods or not? You must register in your goods, you take your goods in a particular premise. If you move to a different one, you must register for that different one. That's what it's supposed to be. Another way, but whether criminals hide it, they keep them there. That's not the issue. Now the issue is we are dealing in terms of registration of these goods. Where do you, well, how in terms of registration in a place? What you are talking in terms of the bill is that you should have a registration on each of the places where you want to keep the goods. That's what it is. Thank you.
Thank you. I always make an example about existing laws when it comes to this, and then my favorite one is this. Liquor Act, because my sister is running a very big business on tavern. What I know, when SA Breweries deliver whatever at her place, if she doesn't have a space, enough space for whatever, for her store, they don't allow you to keep them in a store at your residential area. They say that place is not registered as a business. Business is here. Your license is here. It's not at any other place. You understand? We offload it or we take it back to SA Brewery. So I think that's what I agree with some people. And also I was asking myself, on when it comes to insurance and these cars, if these are cars that belong to Soju and Associate, and then at a certain business place, and then I put 20 cars, and then here, managed only to keep 10. And this 10, I asked for Ndade Muruti to give me a space. How does it work? Because I also have a problem there. I have a problem. We need to really debate this. Let us debate this and get it out of the agenda.
No. Normally, Chairperson, even when you're dealing with a firearms thief, you'd find this type of thing that when you register and you think that this one is the most genuine one to monitor and to make sure that the police themselves are able to look after this type of people and are able to follow up on the type of registration that is happening. Now, if the police are finding themselves wondering when they arrive in your premises and they find that they can't interfere because you've got the license of the one part, the other part you then say to the police, no, this is my other properties. It becomes a gentleman's deal between yourself and the police. And I thought that what we're looking for is what do we criminalize at that particular moment? That you are you going to tell us, or what Kola Banat is trying to say, that this is a genuine citizen. We all agree up front, everybody looks very genuine. But when you ponder and you go into it and you do your police work, you want to put the obligation upon the policeman at that particular moment to make a decision that you are genuine. Because if ever you take property and it's a stolen property, it's between yourself and the policeman. The policeman must be able to say that you have not done the law according to ABC. And if it's not like that, then it then automatically means they can be able to arrest you. But if you want to say that there is still other things that are registered, but they are not here in this premises, they are placed somewhere else, we are really making it difficult. The administer of the law itself is a problem. But at the end of the day, the objective is to say to you that the police have got an obligation to arrest you when they find extraordinary properties on your premises that you yourself can, even if you claim it's yours, but according to the law, what you are looking for, you have not been able to register it with them, or you have not registered with them, and they have to arrest you for that particular thing.
Yes.
Storing property that is not
registered, particularly if we're talking about cars. If I have about 20 cars on my property, and I'm not registered as a dealer, the police may want to investigate me. What am I doing with so many cars when I'm not registered dealer? So, and if I say they belong to so-and-so as a dealer, it is going to take time to go and ask them why you put those cars on my property. So it does make sense that wherever those cars are kept, that those premises be registered. And also on the issue of insurance that you alluded to, when you insure property, they want to know where it is kept. The insurance would have a problem with, I think, a dealer who says, I have this number of cars, but they are not on my property, on my premises, and I do not want to give them the name of the premises. So if I give the name of the premises where I keep my car to the insurance company, why don't I register it?
Ms.
Colabana?
Chair, I've been looking at the relevant pieces of input from the motor, what are they called? Second-hand motor dealers, second-hand whatever they are. What do they call these? They're pre-owned car people. And they say the definition of premises. Previous definition included the provision or any part thereof from which business is conducted. That would be covered by the license. The current definition could be read, for example, to include all vehicle stock, which was surely not the intention. Now that is what he says initially. And then when he refers specifically to the store goods elsewhere than on the premises, then a certificate has to be issued. He says, this is not practical in the motor vehicle dealer environment. As dealers, during the normal course of their business, recondition and consign stock outward, inward, and between dealers. Dealers should also drive them as demonstration vehicles, assign them to customers. They sit on other lots as courtesy vehicles. Certain manufacturers, in terms of their operating standards, do not permit dealers who traded in a vehicle other than the brand, of another brand, to display or store them with the other brand. That means they have to be stored somewhere else, or immediately wholesale to another dealer. Legislation requires that dealer premises must be extended to include any other premises where goods may be stored. There does not appear to be any value to listing these additional premises, as these are usually not client-facing premises. Perhaps this could be reviewed and reworded.
Before I give to, let me give to Director Sandoval.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the concern from the vehicle industry. They do, however, only take their own circumstances into account when they make those submissions. The situation, Madam Chair, that we experience is that, for instance, in the case of vehicles, 20 vehicles are stolen, they're put in a warehouse for a cooling off period, and then from there on shipped out to either dealers or taken across the borders, etc. And in the present, with the application of the present legislation, we often find that we visit the dealer, we will see something in the register, but the goods are not on the premises, they are then kept somewhere else at a warehouse. And that is why the present legislation is successful in that sense, because the dealers have to have a certificate for that premises. Now, you can imagine that if vehicles are shifted between dealers, as is in the presentation, those premises must be registered in any event, whether it's client-facing or not. And I don't think it places an additional onus on them, except for the requirement of having to register the premises. The registers will have to be kept, and if they are exempted in terms of the association membership, the association will have the requirement. If you think of the larger dealerships that is represented by the retail motor industry association, I do not think it will be more onerous for them to register the premises simply because they already have them listed, and they will have a person in charge of those premises, whether it's a warehouse or whether it's a lot where they park the car, in any event. I, I must be quite honest, Madam Chair, with all due respect also to the RMI, I do not see that it makes a huge difference to them from the present situation, firstly, but secondly, with a technology that especially the associations are trying to propagate. I think that won't be a serious problem.
Yeah, I think every member is satisfied, because we must know that even from the onset, we made it very clear to them that we are not regulating for them yet, but regulating for every second-hand goods dealer. So I think your response has laid down our fears. So I think it's really understandable. Yeah. You may then proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Clause 5, on page 6, from line 39 to mid subsection 3, once again, that is a penalty clause. Clause 6, on page 6, on line 51, after the word applicant, to insert, and where applicant applies for registration for more than one premises, the full name and identity number of each person involved in the management of the applicant at each of the premises contemplated in section 4.2. This also relates to the premises question. This clause 6 specifically deals with the information, but this is to allay the fears of the motor industry, where they said that a big corporation could easily be punished for the crimes of one of the managers. And I think we try to allay those fears by linking the premises to a person in charge of that. The next point, on page 7, from line 6 to omit subsection 3, once again the penalty clause. Clause 8, on page 7, on line 25, before goods, to insert second hand. This is just for clarity. On page 7, from line 37, to omit subsection 6, the penalty clause. Clause 9, also to omit the penalty clause. Clause 10, there are no amendments recommended there. Clause 11, on page 8, after line 28, to omit subsection 3 and to substitute, you will remember, honourable members, this was part of the debate with regards to the National Commissioner may, or the National Commissioner must deregister or cancel registration. It now reads, 3A, the National Commissioner may cancel the registration of a registered dealer if the dealer fails to comply with any condition of registration or of the provisions of this Act. So the National Commissioner will have the decision there, the discretion. And then secondly, the National Commissioner must cancel the registration of a registered dealer if the dealer is registered on the basis of incorrect or false information, or 2, is convicted of an offence of which honesty is an element. I must just point out, Chair, if there is a problem with the decision of the National Commissioner, you will see there is a catch net in the very next sub-clause, which allows the person to give 30 days to make representations. If, for instance, sub-clause 3, paragraph B, the National Commissioner cancels registration if somebody provided incorrect information on an application document, the person has the opportunity to make submissions, and then the commissioner can reverse his decision if necessary. Point 2, page 8, from line 48 to omit subsection 7, the penalty clause. Clause 7, on page 9, from line 6, to delete subsection 5, the penalty clause. Clause 13, on page 9, from line 30, to omit subsection 5, the penalty clause. Clause 15, on page 9, from line 42, to omit paragraph A and to substitute A, has in the preceding 5 years in the Republic or elsewhere been sentenced to imprisonment without the option of a fine in respect of any offence of fraud, theft or corrupt activities as referred to in the Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act 2004, Act No. 12 of 2004, or any contravention of the Corruption Act 1992, Act No. 94 of 1992, or the commission of any other offence of which dishonesty is an element.
So, Chair, I see that what we do here is we refer in, for example, under renewal of registration, we refer to a registered dealer. And all the way through, we're actually talking about a certificate, a dealer's certificate, the registration of a dealer. A person is disqualified from being registered. Should we not put in there as a dealer?
Where are you now?
Okay, right now under disqualification number 15, we say a person is disqualified for being registered. Should the registration not be specified all the way through as a dealer? In the same way that we've added second hand all the way through. I think because in some of them, some of the points it says as a dealer and some it doesn't. Just to bring it in uniformly, just a thought.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yes,
I note that. I think it will improve the text. Thank you.
We are waiting for you, Director.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just making that note.
I forgot you're alone today.
Thank you. Point 2 on page 9 in line 47 to omit 200 rand and to substitute 1,000. This was because of the second-hand dealer, the pawn board. The 1,000 rand represents the maximum penalty under the present legislation. Point 3 on page 9 in line 52 to omit subsection 2 and to substitute. You will see in the text there are one of two options. If a person is disqualified to hold a certificate in terms of subsection 1, A has an interest, etc. You will remember Commissioner Jacobs in the previous meeting explained that there was a problem with a typographical portion of that section. But the second option is a rewording of that section to prevent any misunderstanding, and that reads subclause 2, a company, corporation, partnership or trust may not be registered if a person who is disqualified to hold a certificate in terms of subsection 1 has an interest in a company, close corporation or trust, is a partner in a partnership or is a beneficiary under a trust. We think the second option would be the best, and we recommend that option. Okay.
This is the second one, a company.
Will
start with a company?
Yes, it starts with a company. Okay.
I think members agree with you.
Thank you, Chair. Clause 16, 1, on page 10, on line 6, to omit each of, once again this relates to the registration of the premises, and it would make the wording much clearer to represent that the premises must display the certificate for that premises. Point 2 on page 10 on line 7 to omit A and to substitute such. It's also to take that clarification further. On page 10 from line 10 to omit subsection 2, which is the penalty clause. Clause 17 on page 10 on line 18 before goods to insert second hand. 2. On page 10, on line 21, after dealers, to insert which may not be of a lower standard than is required under this Act. You will recall, Madam Chair, that the the issue was that the associations could not negotiate for lower standards for their members if they themselves did not have more stringent standards than in the Act. And this is just to give effect to your decision in that regard. Point 3 on page 10 on line 22, after inspect, to insert any business practice, registers, stock, and. This would give effect to the suggestion from the Copper Development Association that the police may also inspect the premises of the accredited association. And also that the accredited association should also be able not to only inspect the business premises, but their business practices, the registers, the stock, etc. Clause 21, on page 11, on line 17, after 21, to insert 1 in brackets to make that a subclause. On page 11, after line 17, to insert the following subsection 2. 2, the provisions of section 29 applies with the necessary changes in respect of an association. Sorry, Madam Chair, I incorrectly referred to it under the previous clause, but this would give effect to the routine inspections that are now made applicable to the associations also. The police may now inspect them in a similar fashion. Clause 22, 1, on page 11, on line 23, before goods, to insert second hand. You will see the rest of the up to point 9 is also just to clarify the word goods. Then point 10, to omit subsection 9, which is the penalty clause.
Clause 22, there was a proposal that there needs to be items of lower value that should be exempted from being registered. An example of a Tupperware caught in Tembrance was given. That should pawn shop that sell items of 5 friends or 10 friends register those items, or should items of lower value be exempted, which I thought was good.
I think there was also this issue of a chain of a drink, about the respective that was also mentioned there. Director?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It was a suggestion, and we looked at it from all angles. Problematically, cell phones under, for instance, 1,000 rand would also then be excluded. And whilst cell phones, as you heard in the presentation, is one of the biggest crime generators. So we decided, and we would recommend to the committee that it would be easier to utilize the new sub-clause 43, or the old, if you look at your original bill, clause 2, which allows the minister to determine that specific sections of this Act do not apply to certain types or categories of goods mentioned in Schedule 1 or 2. And in that way, the minister may then operationalize this issue much better through exemptions, to exempt, for instance, household goods that are not electronic. And that would allow the, as technology, for instance, develops, that would allow us to keep up with the price of that. So we would recommend that specific exemption not be made under a certain value, simply because that may, for instance, include one of the biggest crime generations, maybe cell phones.
Talking about cell phones that are less than 1,000 rand, but that time we're talking about the value of 10 rand, for example.
Yes.
Should items that cost 5 rand or 10 rand be registered? It surely doesn't make sense.
I absolutely agree with that, Madam Chair. If the committee feels that a certain threshold be placed in here, we will certainly support that.
Yeah, I think really, you can imagine a person who's selling a blacky cool drunk, he said, I want your name and your ID and everything. But I think that was the argument, that at least 100 rands and downwards, if you don't have to register and want their names and everything. If we agree on that one. At least even the cheapest cell phone now is 100 rand upwards. Isn't it? yes,
Madam Chair, I just conferred with my learned colleague here, the state law advisor, who I must say also always ably supports us in this. But it's possible for us to put that threshold in schedule one and the definition of second-hand goods. In other words, you exclude anything under the value of 100 rand. That's why Commissioner would say finish and fly.
Is that fine, member?
Yeah.
Member, I'm saying as long as fair. Doesn't matter where you put it, as long as fair. All right then, may we proceed.
Before we move on, where are we? 22.8. 22.28. Printouts must be made daily. We hadn't finalised that. I mean, if you're dealing with selling hundreds of cars in a day, you've already got a file full of all the documentation. This now states that on top of all the documentation, you then have to print out everything all over again. I think we just need to firm that up without it's quite silly. We need to make some sense of it.
Madam Ruth?
And why should you have printout every day? Why not do it when it's required? I mean, you can do it when it's required. So there's a need to do it every day, obviously, it's going to be unless under cumbersome.
Yeah, I think there was a general argument that they do have their daily races or whatever you call it in the, like at the police station where they have a current book, you know, something like that. So maybe when only it is required, they can make it print out. But can you imagine that every day, print out every day? So I think there was an agreement from members of parliament that we should rather focus on the type of registration or on the type of the method that they are using. We'll be happy with that. But when the police requires at that stage requires them a printout, then they should be in a position of giving them that printout. Do you agree with us, Director?
Madam Chair, yes, I apologize. I actually misunderstood the committee. I was under the impression that we would typically exclude the bigger companies from this under the exclusions when they belong to an association, but for the smaller businesses to keep this as a requirement. But if the committee feels that it must be done, we will take it up.
Chair, perhaps we could simply alter the wording slightly. Printouts must be made on request. Or dealers must, like during an inspection. So if requested.
Yeah, I think as director, the way we explain, you understand. And then you see then how you make it understandable the way we understand it and the way you now understand it. Is it fine then?
It is fine. Chair, if I may, just for clarification, we often in practice find that a person would say to the police, well, if the computers go ahead, you can inspect the registers, and we do not have knowledge of those specific programs. Would it be fine with the committee then if we alter this or to amend this just to make provision for assistance with that inspection, firstly, but also then that the registers that are electronically kept be in a specific format with certain information in certain columns.
Yes,
that
has to be
fine.
So could I not check what are the implications if they don't keep the small dealers, they don't keep the normal daily printers? I'm just talking in relation to the copper, metals, and stuff like that. Yeah? There's a daily intake of things that get recycled and then eventually they are unable to keep track. I just want to check the implications. What are the implications if they don't keep track?
Madam Chair, to you that the implications would be then that they commit an offence if they don't keep it. The printout was to ensure that the registers cannot be altered on the computer after the day's business is finalized, that they quickly change information on the computer.
So we might want to discuss on the matter. I don't know, because you see, the scrap metals industry, the recyclers in particular, the copper, people who use copper stuff like that, on a daily basis, they receive a lot of stolen things and they get to be recycled and they get to be done quickly, stuff like that. So if there's no continuous reprinting or things that they come in, you would not be giving something that's a bit outdated, and if they can't, so I'm not so sure. As I say, it might want us to, because when I ask about the implications, to say, what is that could be done in an event that they don't keep? What are the possible criminal activities that could emanate out of a failure to keep a daily print out? That's the concern. But I guess my concern would have been dealt with the time when you're dealing with the industry as a major presentation. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I know that you asked that question because of honesty, but there is no honesty in other organizations. I mean, if they know that it's a stolen group, it's obvious that they won't put it on the register. You see? The only time we discover that is when the police are doing their inspection. You understand? And so what I'm saying is when they do their inspection, they will be given documents, and then that document at that very moment that they will be doing inspection, if there is something that is not registered within that business, it's only then that they're going to pick that up, to my understanding. But I was saying that everything that comes in, it gets registered, comes out, it deregistered, not with other companies. You know, we want to be honest, you see. I mean, we work for public sector, some of us. We know that these other things, but we are regulating for, to assist even them. We are regulating order for us to close this market of people buying stolen goods. But since we have here clause that deals with penalties, we know that there are some people who are not going to adhere to this clause. I'm not saying that what the honorable member is asking is what I'm saying, but I'm saying in other instances. But when we say that we deal with the issue of the printout, everyday printout, we discuss that at the length. But I don't know. But can you imagine, really, a printout every day? But since you are saying that you must come up with a clear wording, an understandable wording, of what are the responsibility of the dealer and those of the police. Because what we want to do here, one other thing that we need also to do as this committee, we must try and give enough power to the police in order for them to be able to deal with such circumstances when it arrives.
Maybe just to assist the committee, in our research we found in some counties in England, a second-hand dealer must make, these days a printout, but had to take all his registers at the close of business to the local police station.
I can imagine them standing in queue at Woodstock Police Station. Madam Walter, do you want to say something?
Yeah, I wanted to say that the registration is also assisted by the retailers and stuff, because of every company must have a stock movement control. And those retailers, they don't have computers, but they do. They might not have a register to say that we have received so many goods today and that it's spent so much, and then so much have sold out. So they must have that type of register to check on themselves whether they are making profit or not. So I think it also assists them with computers that they register must be there.
Are we satisfied about the method, any method that they use, as long as it's something to do with the registration of their goods in the store? We don't have to say that it's a must, it must be a printout, because you remind me of something. There are small companies that don't have computers. So you can imagine where will they get the print. They'll go into a CNA and ask for the print out and pay for whatever. But I think the issue of registration, and you can see how you can put it as director. But unfortunately, before we pass this bill this morning, we need to have the correct wording of that. That's fine. Okay.
Yes, that is fine, Madam Chair. During tea time or so, we will
okay.
Just reword this.
Okay, that's fine. You may proceed then.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Clause 23. The third point on page 12, line 5, after suspect, to insert or on reasonable grounds should suspect. Madam Chair, the honourable members will note there that the clause reads at the moment, if a dealer suspects that any name, address, etc. is false, then he must report that. But there's no provision for the unscrupulous dealer who would say that I never had a suspicion. And this insertion is just to cover that loophole. Point 2, on page 12, after line 13, to omit subsection, you will see there's a spelling error. It must read subsection 2. And to substitute, 2, upon receipt of a report referred to in subsection 1, the police official must take down the report in a prescribed manner and immediately provide the person who made the report with a prescribed acknowledgement of receipt. Madam Chair, you will remember there were questions in the committee regarding this, simply a telephone call and a writing in the occurrence book as the bill presently stands. In this manner, we can now, similar to the cell phones and the Terrorism Act, etc., similar to that, we can also create a method for reporting and also to put specific procedures in place for the police to comply with that. The next point 3 on takes the issue further. On page 12, after line 15, to omit subsection 3 and to substitute 3, a person required to make a report in terms of subsection 1 concerning a suspicion that any other person intends to commit or has committed an offence in terms of this act may not continue with and carry out any transaction to which such a suspicion relates. This is to prevent, Madam Chair, the situation where a dealer suspects that a vehicle is stolen, for instance. He reports that, but he still continues to buy it. Just to close that loophole. Point 4 on page 12, after line 18, to insert the new subsection 4. This also takes that process further. 4, the police official taking down a report contemplated in subsection 2 must immediately provide the designated police officer with a copy of such report, together with any particulars regarding the registering of any investigation docket arising from such report. There were complaints from the second-hand dealers and pawn board, which we already followed up from police side, that these reports are made and then the police sit back and do nothing. This will at least create a record of what the police did or should have done in those instances.
I'm looking at the first sentence of 23, which is what we were debating and saying, well, you know, a lot of these dealers will take something that they know full well is a stolen vehicle or a stolen item and simply say, I had no idea. Or you say, or on reasonable grounds, should suspect. Now, they're going to say, well, what are reasonable grounds? I had no idea. Is there some way we can firm this up to be absolutely cast iron? I mean, if you know this dealer has something of a history or is suspicious, they have a history of taking in stolen vehicles, cannot he not be as culpable then as the people who are stealing the cars and bringing them to him? How do we shut them down?
Honourable Chair, through you, the present legislation makes provision for receipt of stolen property. So that is one avenue that is already closed down in terms of section 36 and 37, 36 being in possession of stolen properties, 37 receiving stolen property, the General Law Amendment Act 62 of 1955. That's the first part of it. The second part, the on reasonable grounds, we would have loved to be able to describe this more fully, but because of legislative drafting, this is what the court would normally accept as an objective test. You see, if the objectively speaking, another person in that dealer's shoes would not have suspected that something is stolen. I think this is probably the best way to word it, and that would be our recommendation.
So are we clear on that? Spanish.
Should that phrase then be in the definitions, do you think? Reasonable grounds?
I don't think we should attempt that, because the appeal court and the Supreme Court of Appeal have tried in many to define reasonable grounds, but I think there are many tests in our court cases to describe reasonable grounds, and it would be very difficult for me to suggest that we should try and define that, because it is a dynamic concept also. Reasonable grounds being what a reasonable person, objectively speaking, based on the facts. I think that is the latest understanding in terms of the court cases. There we go. That's the latest understanding in terms of the court cases. The facts that are available to that person, what he can see, feel, hear, smell, etc. If based on those facts there is a suspicion, then it would be reasonable. So I think that to put that in a definition would be very long winded.
I think everybody's happy.
Thank you, Chair. So I may continue then with clause 24. Point 1, clause 24 on page 12, from line 35 to omit subsection 3, which is the penalty clause. Clause 25 on page 13, from line.
We don't have to take 13. Just quoting from clause 24. I was also trying to get that. Can you help us, Derek?
We discussed this, and I wondered if some rewording wouldn't be necessary, and I do understand that when we discussed the clause, I'll give you the number, D, 24.1D, you did say that it's law as well. I think the queries there were, what if they take a vehicle to get its COR and they have to put on new windscreen wipers and new tires and new basics? Is that forbidden under this? And I think the fact that they were asking that, and I mean, obviously it wouldn't be as far as I was concerned, but if they're asking that, it must give them, I think the word form perhaps gave them that fear. Could we clarify that?
Thank you, Chair. I think the presentation made by the vehicle industry concentrated on this, also possibly to support the suggestion that they be excluded from the provisions of the Act. The subclause or the paragraph as it is here, I think is reasonably clear, or as clear as we could word it, to indicate that the appearance at least must not be disguised. So if in the process of getting the certificate of registration the vehicle is polished, etc., then I'm sure that would not be a problem. But also to take this matter further, Jay, just for the benefit of the committee, if this vehicle dealer belongs to an association, the association normally, and at present, the motor retail industry associations do this. They have a certain process that they adopt when they register a vehicle. And if those processes are in place, I think vehicle dealers specifically would be exempted from this clause. Because what they have what they call a deal file or a deal docket, in which all the documents from buying the vehicle up to the point where they have it are contained in this file. So I think it's this would be onerous for the person not belonging to an association, but I do not think it's possible to describe it further. And if the committee has suggestions in this regard, we would certainly take that into account.
I'm presuming that it's, and I've read it a number of times, I'm presuming that somewhere in here it says, okay, you may not deliver goods acquired. Does that include selling the goods? I'm taking it you're saying nobody may sell anything as a dealer which they've had delivered to them within 7 days. Now, if you've got a consignment of 100 rand, 50 rand Tupperwares or small items, you're actually saying that they have to keep it for 7 days. So if this person comes and says, oh, give me those, no, I can't sell them. Should we not again put an exclusion clause as we did with the 100 rand situation? I mean, I know they were saying, but if I have a buyer for a Rolls Royce and I've got 900,000 rand vehicle sitting there and I say you can't have it for 7 days, they were up in arms about that, but you did say it was already in the current act. But this is very onerous for the sellers of the tiny items, the Tupperwares, the little can of Coke, the small, to say, no, I can't sell it for 7 days. It seems quite odd.
Yes, Chair, I think that would be rectified by the exclusion of under 100 rand in the definition of goods. For the committee's benefit, I might just describe, I once had the opportunity to visit one of the cash converters stores that Mr. McIver also made a presentation to the committee, and they actually have a receiving department where they buy goods from the seller, and then they have a storeroom where they clean up the items and keep them for 7 days, and then from there it's moved to the showroom where it's displayed and sold. So it may sound quite onerous, but in some instances, some of the suggestions that we had initially was to have this period extended for 30 days. Which I think would be quite onerous, but some dealers prefer that simply because they now have the opportunity to clean up, in the case of the vehicle and polish the tires and put those things that smell nice inside.
About the changing the form. And the question was asked whether that does not include odometer readings. They did say something about the odometer readings. So I want to know whether that concern has been taken into consideration.
Chair, the odometer readings are more specifically described in clause 25, subclause 2, paragraph B. We considered the presentation made by, I think it was the second-hand dealers and pawn board who made that specific presentation regarding the odometer reading. But from our perspective, we couldn't see the problem because a person would buy a vehicle and the odometer reading is then entered into the register. And when it is sold, the odometer reading is once again entered into the register. And I think as long as the second odometer reading isn't less than the first one, there would be no problem.
Mm-hmm.
So the requirement isn't that the buying register and the selling register have the same reading. But I think, you know, obviously that the one shouldn't be less than that.
All right, let us proceed then.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Clause 25 on page 13 from line 6 to omit subsection 6. That is once again the penalty clause. And as I just explained, the dormitory reading was taken into account but considered not to be a problem. Clause 26 on page 13 from line 23 to omit subsection 4 and to substitute. The section that is substituted there gives effect to the presentation made by the Copper Development Association and the suggestions and the subsequent discussions of the committee. No person may, A, have in his possession any apparatus which can be used for the recycling of any controlled metal or any article or substance containing any controlled metal unless such person is registered as a recycler. Or in the case of precious metals, such person is authorized to possess and recycle precious metals under the Precious Metals Act 2005, Act Number 37 of 2005, or any other applicable legislation. Paragraph B, acquire or dispose of any cable consisting of controlled metal of which the cover has been burnt, unless the seller thereof is able to provide a reasonable explanation for the burnt cover, and only after the matter has been reported to a police official in the manner contemplated in section 23.1a, which refers to the report that must be made in the prescribed manner, and then paragraph C, be in possession of any cable consisting of controlled metal of which the cover has been burnt, unless such person is able to provide a reasonable explanation for the burnt cover.
Okay. When we discussed this with the Copper Development Association, there were other methods that if one gets and says you the average thief is now laying the copper on the shelf and burning it, but he said if you ban that, there are other methods of stripping the copper. And he named three. He said it was granulating, stripping, or smelting. And he said inevitably, and we seem to agree at the time, inevitably if we ban the burning, they will find a way to do one of these three other methods of stripping the copper, the plastic off the copper. So I wondered if those three shouldn't be included in this.
Madam Chair, the Metal Recyclers Association also explained that the burnt cable is normally the unsophisticated method of dealing with it, and that any other method would require some form of sophistication, which is the reason why we kept with only kept with a burnt cover.
You've got to catch sophisticated crooks too.
Yes, but we are obviously the committee. We are open to suggestions.
I don't want this to be called a balance show. I want you guys to participate in order for us to reach an agreement on that argument that she's raising that was said here by the recyclers of the copper people. One of those organizations that came here.
What
you are proposing, Honourable Member, what is it that you are proposing after the presentation?
Chair, just to tighten it up further, because certainly in KwaZulu-Natal we have many highly sophisticated people involved in this kind of business, and if they know that burning is now going to attract people's attention, they will try and strip the plastic off or use these other methods to get the plastic off. So my suggestion would be that we say burnt or stripped in any other manner. That would probably cover it.
Okay. Director?
Madam Chair, my apologies. I actually forgot to mention in the first instance that the stripping and the melting or smelting or granulating would require machinery of some sort, and the prohibition is covered in clause 4, paragraph A. So the only method of stripping the cover which does not require machinery of some sort is the burning.
Yeah, I think the other day you mentioned that, I think it was mentioned the other day. Yeah.
Yes, my apologies for omitting that.
Okay. No, it's fine. I understand you are getting old, man. You want to make sense. All right. Director, you may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Point 2, on page 13 from line 30. To omit subsection 5 and to substitute. Subsection 5 is a penalty clause which would be omitted in any event, but to insert a new subsection to link it up with the receipt of suspicious or the suspicious transaction, that subclause to read. If a recycler suspects or on reasonable grounds should suspect that the appearance or aspect of any scrap metal offered to such recycler has been tampered, or there was an attempt to alter the appearance or aspect thereof in order to conceal the identity of the scrap metal, such recycler must make a report contemplated in section 23(1)(c), which applies with the changes required by the context.
Chair, I've been receiving a number of emails with people saying that copper cabling, or all the cabling these days, has got a thin filament running through the middle as an identification marker. It's almost impossible to remove. Why did we not hear about this, or did we hear about it in the presentations? Did I miss it? I don't understand why this wasn't an issue.
Director?
Madam Chair, I think it was mentioned in the presentation of the Metal Recyclers Association, and that filament actually consists of a string, if I may, that is contained within the strands of wire of a copper cable. So it does not, it's not actually within the piece of copper itself, but it's...
Does it burn out?
It can burn out, and that is why the preferred method is to burn it. So it's separate from the copper, but intertwined with the other strands.
All right, you may proceed. So you have an answer then for those people who send emails to you. Ms. Kolobana, you have an answer for them, those who send emails to you.
I
do. Okay. Okay, let's proceed.
Thank you. Madam Chair, clause 27 on page 14 from line 1, to omit subsection 6. Which is the penalty clause, clause 28, on page 14, in line 9, after certificate to insert issued by the National Commissioner. This would be just to make it clear what the appointment certificate is. Clause 29, first point, on page 14, from line 22, to omit subsection 2 and to substitute 2. If upon any inspection a police official discovers that any method of dealing, recording of transactions in registers or storage that is being used is in contravention of this act, the police official may A. demand immediate discontinuation of the method, and B. afford the dealer a period of no more than 7 days to rectify such method in order to ensure compliance with the act. This subsection or subclause was just built in to leave a matter of discretion and humanity, if I may, to the police, so that if there is a minor infringement, as was mentioned in the presentation of the Second Hand Dealers and Pawn Board, that there could be a correction of that method on notice, and then the dealer would not have to be deregistered, for instance. Point 2 on page 14 after line 28, to omit subsection 4 and this is with regards to the inspection. The honorable member, I think Van Wyk, wanted to have a minimum number of inspections included. I discussed the matter with the operational police members who are going to be responsible for the application of the Act, and their suggestion was that a comprehensive inspection be done at least once a year. That would then include going through all the registers, the stock, the business premises, etc. That would be in order to prevent a situation where there's, for instance, a minimum number of inspections required of 2 per year, and it's just another stamp. So this would force the police to have a comprehensive inspection of each business once a year. And that's it, the subsection to achieve that.
I want to hear from him on the panel. I will hear from him once a year. What can happen during the period of 12 months? You can imagine. Because I'm not comfortable with the issue of 1 year. I mean, with our very own police, 3 years can go by very easily without doing that. It's worse than if you say that it's 1 year. You know very well that at the moment we require the police to give us a report of the domestic violence once every 6 months. I don't know, but 1 year, I'm not comfortable with this 1 year. Can we
thank you, sir. Sir, I was just going to say I'm not happy with an annual comprehensive. Why don't we say we agree at least in 6 months' time they must give us the inspection? A year is rather too long.
Can I hear from other members? Ms. Colabon?
Yeah, Chair, do SAPS have the staff to do this? I mean, they are going to have to train officials in the same way that they are trained under the the Firearms Act, etc., to do this. And when one considers the thousands of premises they have to go to, I think it's hugely onerous on SAPS.
I don't think they can do it.
Madam Chair, just to assist, when we talk about a comprehensive annual inspection, this would obviously not include the walk-past inspections where a policeman may enter and look at the registers quickly or check up, is one item that was robbed, for instance, is that to be found. Here we are talking of a proper inspection where the business, the total business is inspected. I think this would be a very thorough inspection. The other inspections would not be as thorough, but we can, we are obviously open to the committee's pleasure on that regard.
Director, I understand what you are saying, but I was just afraid that a wrong may happen to these businesses, and then the dealer will argue that the police were here in January. So if there is something sinister that the police officer suspects that is happening in that business, he or she can't go and do his work because one police officer was there in January. Maybe this thing happens in June. But if you are saying that it's a method of, let's say, reporting that this is what has been happening during this 12-month period, doesn't matter when did they do that kind of a tender, I might say, right, maybe you are not going to say that each and every 6 months then they must bring a report, or they must, if they can have that report from the activities of the whole year, in other words. But if we are saying that if, because you know this dealer, if police officers, if he was there in February, he knows that he won't come until February next year. You understand what I'm saying? So many things can happen till that time and that time. But if we are saying that police are obliged to visit any business anytime if they suspect if there is something that is not going well there, and then we need to give those powers to the police to do this. But of course,
yeah, sir. You know, sir, with the continuous complaints that crime is very high in the country, which also the taking the cognizance about the type of issues that people are raising. The second-hand goods industry is also a way that these things ended up there. Now, in order for us to make sure that we deal with it, we can't just allow the police, the period of time. It doesn't make sense. I'm sure the issue about capacity is something that we can attend. Ordinarily, I would have said 3 months to give the police power. But now I'm tempted to agree with my colleague, maybe to say 6 months, but I think a year is too long, Chairperson. Because you see, you need to give the police the power to be able to. You cannot, one or another, then progress with the second-hand goods dealer. At one level, you are trying to reduce crime. It doesn't make sense. You see, so my opinion would have been 3. But as eventually, that has to check with them, but I think it can be done. Maybe 6 months would be maybe a better compromise, Chair. Thanks.
Honorable
Moase,
and then Honorable
Dalekong. Chairperson, on searching the second-hand dealers, the premises and so on, trying to find out stolen goods and so on, I don't think that will need time frame. Because of you can't say by this time there must be a suspect or maybe some stolen goods at that time and so on. To me, it should maybe have read something like saying that if the mother said the police should frequent that area as long as they have, they are having their own programs, they can say that maybe this week we'll go and search all the scrapyards and so on and so on and so on. But it shouldn't have time frame because of our safety, he hasn't got time frame. Thank you.
I'm not sure what I'm saying, but let me just say. Of course, it's obvious. Theory and practice are not one and the same thing. But practically, I think it would be an ideal thing for a preliminary report to be submitted in 6 months' time. And a comprehensive report should be submitted in 12 months' time. I think it's an ideal thing. It's reasonable.
Ms. Colabana?
Yeah. Chair, I think we have to be very careful not to, while one cannot at any stage prevent or even think of preventing staff members from going and examining everything at second-hand dealers, I don't think we can put an extremely onerous format onto legitimate dealers who, when I go through, I mean, I'm quite sure, I mean, they're tied up in knots as it is. We're talking about the Motor Industry Bargaining Council, Financial Services Board, Financial Intelligence Center Act, National Credit Act, National Road Traffic Act, auditors, they're registered VAT vendors, so that has to be audited. They have huge numbers of examinations of their books and goods and chattels annually in any case by a number of institutions. So we have to find a way to give SAS all the powers they need for the dealers who are patently dealing under the table, while we cannot put more on top of the heads of the legitimate dealers, and there are thousands of them in the country. So I think we have to look quite carefully at this. We can't clamp down on the legitimate ones who are really, they're following the law to the nth degree. They came and gave, they've worked with the legal division, they've come and give, they're right above board and open. So we can't look to making their lives more difficult because there are a lot of bad apples out there. There's got to be a way to do this without putting more on top of them.
Thank you, Chairperson. The problem that I'm having is, firstly, when they do this comprehensive reporting in a year's time, do they want to, will it be for them to discover the discrepancies that have happened in between? And if that is the case, if they discover that there has been discrepancies, will they be able to go back and arrest if there is need be, or close down if need be? Will it not be late, maybe? because some of them will already have been gone or closed down because they know that there are suspicions against them. Can I be clarified on that?
I think there is a mistake we are making here, Chair. Amongst other things that the Billingtons do is to create conditions, conducive. We are not only legislating for those who would be regarded as legitimate only. We are also trying to create conditions, to create a limited space for crime to take place. I'm trying to say we must make a mistake of trying to think we're including and excluding others. We're trying to create an overall conditions conducive, creating a very limited space for crime to take place. So that I wouldn't really see why we can't say 6 months to 12 months. Coordinated, reported. I mean, really, it's reasonable. 6 months is reasonable. Preliminary, it's reasonable.
I'll concur with those who said the preliminary report of 6 months shall be taken so that if the crime is soaring, is going up, it could be a new strategic method to say that now because of the crime is increasing, this is what we need to be doing when the preliminary report and then the final report, comprehensive report, can be done annually.
The feeling is that police may visit any dealer anytime during the 12-month period, and then we get a comprehensive report at the end of the year. That is annual, in other words, comprehensive report annual. But I'm not saying that once a year they need to visit a certain business. They're saying that anytime they can visit any business and then come up with a comprehensive report at the end of the 12-month period of annual or whatever you call it. Ms. Corbanas, are you differing from what they're saying?
No, I just need clarity from you. Are you suggesting that the police will now have the power to search premises and demand information without a warrant?
So I'm not saying that police are going to do anything that is not contained in the Act. If the Act demand a warrant, but I think, I can't remember here who said that they need a warrant to go and search the premises. I think there was a discussion on that one. I think you need to assess that. I think somebody was raising the issue of the warrant. Somebody was very much against that, the issue of the warrant. Because if something happens now, that means the police can't intervene at that moment, must just go and get the warrant. By the time he comes back, but then, I think that was one of the things that were raised by the presenter. Can I hear from you then?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to point out that the reason why we split the police powers into Clause 29, routine inspections, and Clause 30, entry, search, seizure, and seal off, was to make it very clear that the police would have the power to walk into a business at any time to inspect registers. If there are, for instance, a rise in housebreakings, the police would be able to go to second-hand dealers to see if there is a rise in selling of video machines, televisions, etc., which is the reason for the routine inspections. The concerns from the industry with regards to the warrants, Madam Chair, was specifically regarding the wording of the Act, where reasonable suspicion once again was mentioned there. And the complaint was that the police would abuse this power, etc., but it is actually a quite the normal policing authority which is contained in the Criminal Procedure Act, which has been in operation since 1977. So we are dealing with the normal procedural aspects in Clause 30, which does not differ from the normal, and I may add, constitutional procedures that the police may follow. So there must be distinction drawn between routine, where we go and check and inspect, And that is why we suggested that an annual inspection then be done, which is comprehensive, but that would not detract from our normal day-to-day policing, where we walk into a business and check whether the selling of goods relates to a rising crime in that area, firstly, but secondly, when we get to Cross City, where we actually have to do police investigations arising from dockets, that we have the teeth to get a warrant to search, or in an emergency, as you explained, Madam Chair, go there without warrant.
Yeah, I think when you differentiate between the two, the routine inspection and the search and seizure and all that, I think it is understandable now where the warrant issue comes in. To me, I just want to give to other members, because I'm satisfied with what is contained in the Act when it comes to the differentiation of these two kinds of methods by the police. Dr. Khosa?
Yeah, sure. I was saying that in the same, in number 29, if you check, clause 4, is it number 4, line 30. It says, on an occasion when a police official inspects the register in terms of subsection B, such police official must sign his or her name immediately after the last entry in the register and append his or her number and rank and the date in which the inspection was conducted. So therefore, it does also cover the aspect of identification, the issue of who you are and stuff like that. So it's not a problem. It's not a problem. Thank you.
Are we all then on the same level? We all understand it like that? Ms. Colabana, you seem to be quiet.
Yeah, you should be grateful, Chair. I just want to read you a sentence here. This is from taking the car dealer people. Is this constitutional? What happened to innocent before proven guilty? The jurisdiction of the bill is very wide. No other legislation, to our knowledge, has provided such a wide blanket of power to the regulating authority. It seems in principle that SAPs can walk into any business at any time and make demands that if you fail to comply with immediately will be deemed as an offence. All other legislation has a process that has to be followed in the event of a real or perceived transgression, and the people that have to audit or investigate ensure compliance are qualified and skilled in this respect, such as auditors. The same should be applicable in respect of this bill. So they were quite enthusiastic about being against.
Yeah, I'm not surprised that comes from the second-hand motor industry, something. I'm not surprised that comes from them. But if you remember, after lengthy deliberations with those people, and they admitted that they don't want to be affected, but they want to be excluded from this, and you ask yourself, what is it that they're hiding? What is it that they're hiding if they want you to be excluded from this Act? So everything about unconditionality and what they're raising, I said with the legal team, there is nothing like that. So it's not true. Yes?
If I'm a police officer, one patrol, here is a group of people in the village carrying, you know, this very big instrument for breaking everything. Makamisa. Here is a group of people carrying a makamisa into a premises, very suspicious. Should I go and look for a warrant check, or should I? Practical, what do I do as a police officer? This is very suspicious, very big instrument, breaks everything. Makamisa, what do I do? I'm very suspicious of this thing.
Madam Chair, to you, in those instances, we will apply the Criminal Procedure Act, where we can act immediately without a warrant if we have a reasonable suspicion, and if there is not sufficient time to obtain a warrant. So the presentation or the representations made in this specific representation that was referred to, that it's unconstitutional, etc., is simply not true. In practical terms, we would use the present legislation, the Criminal Procedure Act, which is worded exactly as is in this Act and many other pieces of legislation.
Thank you, Director. May proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to take that issue further, sub-clause clause 29 to substitute point 2 to omit subsection 4 and to substitute, the police official must conduct at least a certain amount of annual inspections. Can I have the committee's decision on that, Madam Chair, that I can just include that in the final wording?
Fine, as long as we put it the way we want it to be.
Thank you. Comprehensive annual inspection of each registered premises during which the records contemplated section 22.1 must be examined. And then B, on each occasion when a police official inspects the register in terms of subsection 1B, such police official must sign his or her name immediately after the last entry in that register and append his or her number and rank and the date on which the inspection was conducted. And then we inserted this just to make provision for records that are kept on a computer to certify in the manner that the National Commissioner may from time to time direct that the records were inspected, which means that we could, if the records are on a computer, that we could leave a certificate with a dealer to say we inspected the computer records and this is what the certificate looks like.
Ms. Fun?
Chair, how many in a case, how many visits by police could be construed as harassment? We've got no limit to the number of visits. You might have 15 different police strolling past there, all of whom stop in at a particular place and demand to see all the records. Is it not upon us to say no more than X inspections annually?
Every after 10 to 20 minutes, you see helicopters hovering over Tembisa because once cars get into Tembisa stolen, they get to be cut and chopped into the chop shops, and within an hour to 30, for 30 to an hour, they disappear. Like the police quite often, in Soweto also in Alexandra, once such a thing happens, the first thing they do, they move to the chop shops and second-hand shops that are selling car parts and stuff, because they know people don't want to go and do that. So you can't have, say, you know, look, yesterday police did go there when there was some car stolen. Today you can't go there because someone has already been there 3 hours ago. It can be. As long as the issue of crime continues, police have got the right to go there and search and do anything, anytime, anywhere. There should not be any limitation. That's what you're saying. It should be like that. Until all of us are convinced now that we are able to deal with crime and going down, but you see, the issue is that it's unfortunate that there are genuine second-hand dealer people and dealers and stuff like that, but also majority of those who are criminals, or who are actually working criminals. Therefore, you would find it difficult to distinguish between them. Once criminal activities are taking place, all the time police must do them. If they can't, they have to be cast here, that are parked in front of them, people are stealing them all over. The speaker can't say, no, but yesterday we were here because we were told that there was a car in Parliament and come next week or come later at 9 o'clock or whatever. No, it's not going to happen. If there's a suspicion, they must always come. Thank you.
And I don't think that really because you particularly, Ms. Colabantans, we spoke about the capacity of the police. Do we have police that will be able then to give us reports on a six-month basis because of the number and also what is expected, training and what and have you? I don't think that really they will visit the Soviet Association every day and see what is happening there. Even as a person, you can even use your own discretion. If you come to a business and then you see that this officer has signed and done this and this and this and this only yesterday, and I'm here today. If it will return to you, unless there is something that is afraid, there is something that is happening there. That's my own thinking. Dr. Masrule, and then Dr. Mruti.
This is a question, not a statement. If my business is legitimate, it's known as a fact, why should I all the time concentrate about police raids? Why should I work? If I'm legitimate, why should I?
I think section 29.4 offers dealers protection in the sense that any policeman who comes there must give his full details. So when there is harassment, they have recall. They can say so and so came at this time to harass me. And when the police know that they can be followed up and they cannot hide the identity, I don't think they will go to an extent of harassing businesses.
Yeah, I think we all understand that. At the end of the day, we're all human, you understand? So I think we... You may proceed and Director.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On that same clause 29, page point 3, on page 14, from line 33 to mid subsection 5, the penalty clause. Clause 33, one, that the following be a new clause, offences and penalties. This is before the committee, Madam Chair. Do you want me to read this into the record? Clause 33, which is now the offences and penalties.
Yeah, you
made
it,
yeah? Thank you, Madam Chair. Offences and penalties, I will read this. As the reference change with the insertions of the new clauses, obviously that will be checked by the state law advisors and ourselves before. Yes. 33, 1, a person who fails to comply with section 3.1, b, fails to apply for registration of all premises in terms of section 3.2, c, furnishes false information in support of an application in terms of section 5, d, furnishes false information in support of an application in terms of section 6, e, fails to comply with section 8.1, f, contravenes or fails to comply with section 9, g, contravenes or fails to comply with section 11, H, fails to renew registration in terms of section 12.1 and who continues to conduct the business of a dealer. I, fails to surrender or transfer the certificate other than in the manner prescribed in section 13. J, contravenes or fails to comply with section 16. K, contravenes or fails to comply with section 22.1, sub 3, sub 4, sub 5, sub 6, sub 7 or sub 8. L, contravenes or fails to comply with section 23.1 or sub 3. M, contravenes or fails to comply with section 24. N, contravenes or fails to comply with section 25.1, 3, 4 or 5. O, contravenes or fails to comply with section 26.1, 4 or 5. P, contravenes or fails to comply with section 27. Q, as a dealer contravenes or fails to comply with section 29, R, contravenes or fails to comply with section 38, or S, contravenes or fails to comply with section 43, is guilty of an offence. 2, any person convicted of a contravention of or a failure to comply with any section mentioned in column 1 of schedule 4 may be sentenced to a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding the period mentioned in column 2 of that schedule, opposite the number of that section, or to both such fine and or imprisonment.
To both fine and imprisonment, is that what you're saying?
Yes, both fine or imprisonment. I think the normal wording, Madam Chair, is that it would be all.
Fine or?
Yes. Now, I apologize. The Honourable Member is in fact correct. I will amend that to read fine and imprisonment. Thank you, Madam Chair. Then clause 42, 1, on page 17, on line 30, before goods to insert second hand. 2, on page 17, on line 31, before goods to insert second hand. Then a new clause 43, on page 17, after line 51, to insert new clause 43, and you will recognize this clause as the old clause 2 that was stuck in here. Mm. Application of Act and Promotion of Administrative Justice Act 2000, 43, 1, this Act does not apply to A, any second-hand goods sold or disposed of by way of public auction authorized by warrant of execution, under a judgment or order of a court of law, or B, any dealer who is a member of an accredited association to the extent that the minister by notice in the Gazette exempts members of such an association from any or all of the provisions of this Act. 2. The minister may only exempt members of associations that are accredited by the National Commissioner and capable of introducing adequate levels of self-regulation in order to achieve the objects of this Act. 3. Any administrative process conducted or decision taken in terms of this Act must be conducted or taken in accordance with the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act 2000, Act No. 3 of 2000, unless otherwise provided for in this Act. Schedule 1.1 on page 19, after line 22, to insert the words shop fitting equipment. That was on the recommendation of the second-hand dealers in Cornwall. Schedule 2, on page 17, in line 30, after the word bronze, to insert cobalt. That was on the recommendation of the Copper Development Association. Then a new Schedule 4, 1, to insert after Schedule 3, the following new schedule, Schedule 4, that has in column 1 all the sections that could be transgressed with the penalties against those transgressions. Thank you, Madam Chair. That is all the amendments that are recommended from our side.
Members, does the amendment arising from your intervention in the first second-hand goods bill, if there is any other thing that you think it has been left out before we go to the clause by clause? Ms. Colavana?
On page 13 of the bill, that is under chapter 5, 5. A dealer must retain the copies for a period of not less than 5 years. I just wondered what reason there was for this. They seem to think it was very onerous to try and keep these files for 5 years. Is there some... for example, for tax purposes, how long does one have to keep? Is it 5 years as well? So, are they obliged by law to keep them already, to keep them for 5 years, or is this now an additional period that we're just adding in? I just need a reason for this. I couldn't quite work it out because they seem to say it was very long.
All right, Director.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, the reason that this specific section is in here, or the clause, sub-clause, is to make provision for people other than the motor industry who do not necessarily have to keep that transaction for that period because they fall under the cut-off amount. And some of them prefer to do it that way to stay under the radar and therefore do not have to keep these records. Once again, this, I think, is one of the prime examples of the exemptions that the motor retail industry specifically would be able to request, simply because they do have those records available. And to require of them to have this in another format would simply be counterproductive. And they would be exempted from these typical transactions that they have to keep in any event.
Thank you very much, Director. And the number
two? Well, what has been said in the light of clause 2. There was a query that why should some dealers be exempted because they belong to the members of an accredited association? Because it is possible that the accredited association might not be able to detect that one of their members is involved in fraudulent behavior. So, and the suggestion was if they are not, every dealer is not individually registered, that it might create loopholes. So, I want to know from the director how this concern is being addressed and why should others enjoy the privilege of not being subjected to the whole act just because of their membership to an organization.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The whole idea of the associations being accredited and to provide the members of those associations with some benefit, if you may call it that, was to bring into the fold specifically entry-level dealers who do not always have the ability to comply with the present legislation, so that the associations would be able to mentor them in some way until they have an established business. That's the one aspect. The second aspect, the exemptions would be provided for people who already, for instance, in the case of the vehicle industry, have to keep records of transactions. So instead of duplicating in this act, we would then exempt the dealers from keeping those registers. But if this was done across the board, I think many loopholes would be created. That is why we require an association to be accredited. The association would prescribe to their members exactly how they must keep those records for purposes of that, or for the financial, the Finance Act, or for this act. And then the police would ascertain from that. That is the information that we would in any event need, and we can accredit this association. It also places a responsibility on the associations to self-regulate their members and to discipline their members if they do not comply. On a practical level, Madam Chair, I can just mention that the old saying is, it takes a thief to catch a thief. And a lot of the members or the role players in the industry want to be legal. And they are probably our best informants from a police point of view. They are our best informants. And if we allow the dealers to associate in memberships, in associations, as members of that association, I think it would improve also the quality of information that we get from the industry side about the people who are really illegal and operating illegally and doing so. So the whole idea is to provide us with information on the real criminal, and to get the people who want to be legal to benefit them to a certain extent, in the sense that they are excluded from having to keep duplicate registers, etc.
Thank you.
I want to know whether if an association has a member that has contravened some sections of the Act, will also lose their license as an association. As an individual dealer also loses a license when they have contravened the Act.
Yes, Madam Chair, in Chapter 3, provision is made that the associations must have a disciplinary code. So they have to discipline their members. If they do not do that, you will note Clause 20, the National Commissioner may cancel an accreditation if there is non-compliance by the Dealers Association concerned with any criterion for accreditation. And one of the criterions would be that they must be trustworthiness, they have integrity, capacity to perform their functions in terms of this Act, which includes maintaining minimum legal and ethical standards. So if the association does not conform to the standards of the Act and actually take the application of the Act forward in a positive manner, they may be the accreditation may be cancelled.
I want confirmation that being a member of this accredited association is not going to shield you from police if they want to suspect anything. I just want to need confirmation that the police can deal with those individual members of associations as they deal with those who don't belong to the association.
Through you, Madam Chair, I think the one thing that we've learned with the application of the present Act is that we tend to concentrate on the registered or the people that we know of. So in this dispensation, we want to ensure that we get the people who want to be legal into the fold. But that would not exclude them from being policed. I think that the message would be very clear, Honourable Member, that these people would be prosecuted as vigorously as anybody else if they commit a crime.
Chair, it strikes me that while we detailed in Schedule 4 the maximum periods of imprisonment, we've not detailed the fines. You've always said imprisonment or a fine, or both, but we detail the one and not the other.
Madam Chair, the modern way of drafting the legislation is not to refer to the amount of the fine, because that often would require amendments to the legislation. So we now have the Apportionment of Fines Act that that couples an amount with the period of imprisonment that specifies. Unfortunately, I do not have those tables available, but they are from time to time updated.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. You know, our learned friends, they keep us been informed. I mean, I was also wondering. Yeah, no, thanks a lot. We've come to the end of this first document, that is the amendment. And so far, so good. We break for tea and give yourself a chance then, and Director Van der Waals, in order for you then to insert everything that needed to be inserted, and also come up with also amicable wording of other things that we refer to ourselves, so that when we come back we then vote on clause by clause, and I'm sure that's going to take us about 30 minutes will be through, since it started with this process and we all agree on this document. So because of the processes of Parliament that we need, unfortunately, to go clause by clause, we'll do that immediately after tea. Can we break for tea? Then we'll take something like 20 minutes and all of us will be in that time. Director Van der Waals, we'll go through this. Where there are some issues to insert or amendments, he will read from his document, which will reflect on the screen while they are making copies for us, so that we should not wait for further for the copies here, for the copies. And at least by the time we receive those, we might be through with this. Yeah. So this is the last part then of this. Yeah. You may then proceed,
Madam Chair, sorry, do you want me to read the section and then?
No, I think that's the way we used to do it. Myself, I would say that section so-and-so, is there anything, because anything is exactly the same as the, if there is anything that you need then to insert on top of what we have, and then you'll say. Because you made it very easier for us, because you, there are both, there are much both here.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this one that we have here is in chapter, isn't it?
Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not
the
chapter.
Remember the one.
Yes, chapter. We start chapter one and then clause one. Isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Are you saying anything?
No, sorry, ma'am.
Fine. Okay. Then we are saying that we start then with what is written, Schedule 2, Control Measures, Schedule 3, blah, 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 blah. Interpretation and application of F. That's what is written in your document that you have. I want us also to follow this. And then the definition, and then the close one. Can you all see that?
Yes.
Yes. But what I'm saying then is, there is something that has been inserted here. This is the meaning of antique. Yeah. So if we all agree here, as you are going through, if there is something that you think that you don't agree with, or you want clarity on, you just raise your hand, but we won't read the whole thing as it is.
I'm sorry, English. In your definition of antique, you're saying goods, plural, representing a previous era and collected or desirable because of, you see, goods, it would be their age, T-H-E-I-R, their condition, their utility, their unique features, that's fine.
May I suggest, Madam Chair, that we just take out the word it, which would solve the problem.
Yes, that would solve the problem. That's fine.
Yeah,
The next page that starts with monetary value.
Okay.
I like that.
Okay.
The next page, information on application. The page he starts with, he is convicted. We focus on the stated sentences of area. The next page.
Madam Chair, on that page, clause 15, the suggestion has been inserted, a person is disqualified from being registered as a dealer.
As a dealer, yes. Okay. Are we all there?
Yep.
On the next page, Madam Chair, on top there, that sub-clause 2 was reworded to read as follows. A company, corporation, partnership or trust may not be registered if a person who is disqualified to hold a certificate in terms of subsection 1 has an interest in that company, close corporation or trust, is a partner in that partnership or is a beneficiary under that trust. That is the next page is clause 22, where the discussion was with regards to sub-clause 8, where the dealer keeps registers electronically, printouts must be made. After discussions between myself and the state law advisor, we realized that if we take out that sub-clause completely, it would actually not make a difference. There still is the obligation to keep the registers, firstly, and secondly, in the further sub-clause of the routine police inspections, the dealer must assist the police to have that available and have it the visual format. So we can take that out completely.
Good. What you are saying that the sub-clause 8, we deleted the whole thing. Next page.
Document that's been handed off, are all the changes you've now made in this one?
Yes.
Because it doesn't seem, yes it does. Just a moment, please. Hold on, Lauren.
Sorry. All right.
Madam Chair, just one qualification, that antique definition where we deleted the word it, that would not be reflected in.
Okay. All right, next page. Then we start with in the case of. Next page. Is there not anything that is discussed under this police inspection and obtain something? 4A.
Madam Chair, there was some discussion on that, but as far as I can recall, the committee members were satisfied with the discussion and the explanation.
Yes.
Sorry, Chair, something that's also jumped to mind. If I remember correctly, we defined second-hand goods, and we put that 100 rand cut-out thingy, and it's not in there. Aren't you glad you have a blonde on the committee?
We plead guilty, Madam Chair. That's the one thing that we omitted to do, but we will rectify that immediately.
All right, the next page. Saying that the question that he just asked Ms. Kalabana about these 100 friends, he said that it must be set up under the schedule. Let's hope that they did that. Did you set that under schedule?
We will include it in the definition right now, Madam Chair.
Okay.
I'll just discuss with you, I'm going to have to be excused. I want to be on record that I support the bill as you see my amendment.
Thank you very much, Madam Ruti. Madam Ruti says that anything that we do here, he is out of the
The next page is clause 33. Nothing new there. Everything that was said previously. The next page. I don't see anything there. Let's say we start with X on good cause sound and show. Yeah, second hand good. Yeah, only two there. The next page. Equipment is on. Next page, we're nearing the end, and then we come to the end. We come to the end. We all agree on this. Nothing. Katemuruti trust us that he won't do anything after he's left.
Hey, could you just tell me, and I can't find it, where it, I'm sure it says somewhere in here that it does not apply to goods being auctioned. Where is that? Do you know?
Madam, it says, what in the old clause 2, the new clause 43.
Yes, but 43 says, does 43 not say auctioned under...
Yes, that would only be an auction as a consequence of some court case.
That is quite a very different thing. Initially it said, did not apply to goods being auctioned. Now it says auctioned as disposed of by way of a warrant of execution.
Madam Chair, the bill initially, the sub-clause, the clause 2, sorry, was deleted and inserted as is.
As is?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I thought it was general. If you remember, Chair, there was a query that one of them said, does this cover goods being auctioned? And there was a query about it, and I thought that was, but this, does it or doesn't it? I don't know.
Yes, Madam Chair, that the Act includes auctions which is not a consequence of the Courts Act. In other words, normal auctions, but obviously excludes fixed property. It doesn't state that specifically, Madam Chair, but it's implied in the definition of a dealer when somebody does business as a dealer in second-hand goods.
Okay. Now we have a discussion then. Now that we've come then to the end of this specific one, that is the clause by clause, will then, I understand that they want to test whether I can read. There is something that says, yeah, it's a report now from ourselves as a committee to the House, and also a motion of desirability from the committee that we must read and agree upon, and then it gives us to Jeremy. Jeremy knows then where to from here. And then what is important is that we'll be debating this piece of legislation on Wednesday next week, which is the 19th, isn't it? Yeah, the 19th next week, yeah. The first piece of paper that I need to read to all of you. The last time I read like this is only when I'm in church, but at least I must read today. That is motion of the desirability portfolio committee on safety and security, second-hand goods bill, D2-2008. That in the opinion of the committee, legislation is desirable to regulate the business of dealers in second-hand goods and pawn brokers in order to limit the trade in stolen goods, to promote ethical standards in the second-hand goods trade, and to provide for matter connected therewith. Jeremy, I've read it as it is written. I didn't do anything. I didn't change anything. And then the second one is also Portfolio Committee on Safety and Security, second-hand goods bill, B2-2008. This one is a report. The Portfolio Committee on Safety and Security, having considered the subject of the second-hand goods bill, B2-2008, referred to it and classified by the joint triggering mechanism as a Section 76 bill, endorses the classification of the bill and reports that it has agreed to the bill, or recommend it, or reject it, but at least we have recommended, presents a draft, a redraft of the bill, stroke agreed to an amendment bill, so we have agreed to an amendment bill, B21-2008, signed by myself, 12 March 2008. We're in agreement of that. By so saying, Jeremy, next time please, we can't sit here for the whole day, just eat and eat and eat again. Huh? But apparently after all this exercise, we need to eat again.
Sure.
Thank you very much. We've come to the end of the meeting. Is our last meeting? And the next meeting, I will send out SMSs or anything, or Jeremy will send out then notices of a meeting when I have spoken to the minister about the appointment of the executive director for the ICD. I did sit with the minister. The minister did nominate the candidate, and then we are only supposed then to go through the parliament processes, and ourselves, the portfolio committee, we need to endorse the name that the minister will become coming to us. So once he sees all those processes, and then I can now give a specific date. I'm afraid he might find that 26th that is written there, he might not even be here. That's why I'm saying that it might be before that time. But I will interact with the minister about that this afternoon. Thank you very much. We've come to the end of the meeting. See you next week when we debate.
Senator, on Friday, I was thinking maybe we wait for the minister to
meet.
Maybe you can sit on Friday.
No. You can sit by yourself. No, we can't sit there because the process is, if we are supposed to sit on Friday, the process is of getting a referral from the speaker, doing what and what should have been in front of us.
No.
I'm thinking it's not. Yeah.
Okay.